Absolutely, led by Councilmember Cavallari.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Meade?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Okay, first up is audience communication. Anybody want to talk? Nobody signed up. So we have a guest in the audience. We have Councilmember Cavallari's mother. Are we going to get a picture?
Of our strategic planning process, and we're nearing the finish line, if you will. And just to reiterate from what I said at the last council meeting, the plan after we kind of get through these brainstorming sessions is to come back and provide you with draft strategy statements. And for some things that have come up during the brainstorming, maybe more projects or priorities, and so we'll try to kind of segregate those out from the strategies. I have a retreat scheduled with the department heads to take all of this information and make sure we identify some projects and priorities for your consideration that we think are necessary or maybe sequential to doing other things that you want to do. And then ultimately, there'll be a public engagement process. So a couple things to be looking for is we'll probably have I'll host a work session one day if anyone's interested in joining to help kind of wordsmith the strategies that we'll be bringing back to the council. And then the other is I really like to schedule maybe a half-day retreat or at least have you guys consider doing something like that in May where you'll take the draft strategy statements and and brainstorm kind of more projects or initiatives or priorities you'd like to see occur over the next several years under those strategies, as well as discuss what the department heads have put together. And then that whole picture is what we will send out for public comment and invite input for additional priorities and strategies. So one, be looking for an email if you'd like to be a wordsmith and join us in that party. The other is just we'll be bringing this back in a future council meeting, the next council meeting or two. But think about what you feel like with the idea of an off-site retreat for a half day, three quarters of a day, and a weekend to kind of bring all this together, or if you'd like to continue doing it in the format that we have been. We don't need an answer tonight, but just kind of think about it. So with that being said, tonight's strategy and brainstorming session is on economic prosperity and leadership. And when these goals were developed at the retreat in 2016, we really talked about being more proactive in terms of economic development. And we have fleshed out some themes since then, right? Sports tourism, tourism zones, public-private partnerships, I think are some of the themes that we've kind of started evolving since that 2016 retreat. And then in leadership, we really kind of talked about that, not just the city manager, the mayor, but it was really the entire team, right? The directors, the city manager, the council, all had a leadership role to play in positioning the city at the regional, state, and national level, and how we would do that. So by way of just that little trip down memory lane and what got us to those goals, we'll open up the process to kind of write down your thoughts on, I assume everyone has pens and paper, sticky notes, for what you'd like to put. Let's start with economic prosperity. And Greg, you do such a good job. Would you be our post-it?
I'd be happy to.
Post-it manager?
Seen your handwriting?
Yeah.
Different answers up there.
I think possibly that we just wordsmithed everything to devil.
John's handwriting from here.
Just looks like hieroglyphics, that's why.
It's because he's got the three little lines that they got in primary school, right?
That's right. Excellent, thank you.
Okay, Mike, you win.
I'm tired now. I can't get people
working. Oh, he is recovering from surgery, but he is retired for medical reasons. So,
really?
Yeah. They're going to have a little... I'm trying to think. The Guild is doing a little retirement recognition for Roscoe, so.
So it means he's obviously he's no longer a officer?
Right. So as unfortunate as that was, the succession planning worked out really well because we had Nathan and Bagheera through training and certified and on the street as Roscoe was retiring, so. Mm-hmm. Yep. Typically, they buy the dogs for $1, the canine handlers, and that's what Ian did in this case. So.
Does the dog have kind of a retirement plan? Do we assist him, I mean?
No.
With feeding and whatnot?
No. No.
I remember the first time Officer Durkee brought it in, he just glared at us. Yeah. Tell me which one I'll eat from.
Well, and you do see the difference, you know, with Bagheera, that's really that social dog plus that police dog. And Bagheera is very social and playful, but like that can be ready to go to work.
I'm missing
that.
Oh, I'm working on the next one.
Overachiever.
I just want to be last.
Okay, are we ready?
So there's a wide variety of ideas. I'm trying to categorize them as best as possible, but we'll do the best here. Let's start here with tourism. And I group that in with one that says destination of choice, in quotes, or home. And continue to market our current assets that set us apart, trails, parks, etc. And understand Mill Creek's place in the regional economy. So kind of a who we are, celebrate what we have, look for opportunities to do more. This one is in there too. We need to find opportunities that meet unmet needs in both the city and county to cater tourism. To create tourism avenues. So again, the tourism put there. This one's create a performing arts center for music, theater, dance, cultural civic activities, and more, and a bunch of other stuff along those lines. But we'll also bring tourism. So that's kind of that that tourism marketing, who we are, what we have, kind of section there.
Before you go to a new one, let me chime in. So I'm the one that had the odd one that I can't believe you put in that category, but nice try, Greg. So our thing says, our goals say, development efforts, economic development efforts that result in a robust local economy and position the city as a destination of choice. And maybe this is going to get too esoteric, but I think our local economy involves a lot of just what is here and not necessarily a destination. So this, my question was, I wonder if our goal should be a destination of choice. Do we want to be a destination for people, or do we want to be home for people?
I didn't interpret your sticky note that properly.
Yeah. Well, so that, and I don't know, you know, maybe it's a discussion for another time, but you know, you think of Las Vegas as a destination. They want to be a destination. They want people to come there. Orlando. I think fundamentally we are home for a lot of people, and I don't think we want to put being a destination ahead of being home. And so I'm questioning whether our goal, our economic prosperity, don't want to sacrifice our local quality of life for to become a destination for other folks to come and trample all over our trails or whatever. I mean, I think there's an opportunity for people to, for us to share what we have, but I'm wondering if we, looking back at this goal, maybe we ought to go back and think about that. I think there's economic prosperity that has to do with jobs and people and education and sports and cultural things that we do in our own local economy.
And I think all the goals are balanced, right, one against the other. And so I think you're trying to achieve all these goals in a balance. But I think that's an important discussion, because that would be a significant policy shift. As I recall, I think when we talked about this, we talked about, you know, in terms of fiscal responsibility, and we were talking about long-range planning and creating revenue sources that would carry the city into the future. And so when we were talking about economic prosperity, we talked about creating opportunities. And for me, I think destination of choice can be a lot of things. So, you know, Orlando's a big destination of choice, right? But maybe Mill Creek is a destination of choice for those family-centric activities, you know, the recreation, the eating at Town Center. And so that could bring in that revenue, but not necessarily drain your services either. And so, you know, and I'm just trying to go back and kind of reflect on the conversation. But at the same time, I do remember how that spurred kind of, we don't want to lose what made Mill Creek special. And that's how we came up with the one goal about maintaining our cachet, if you will. And so, so maybe that's at least what I would call it.
Well, maybe a wordsmithing thing, because like you're pointing out a good thing. I think for me as a resident, my destination of choice for going to a restaurant or going to a sporting event or whatever should be Mill Creek. But it's just kind of funny. The word destination to me implies outsiders coming in as opposed to insiders also staying in. And so I don't know if destination conjures up the wrong, too narrow a focus.
Well, I think we're thinking of destination because of our other conversations strictly in a tourism sense. But I think if you go and look at the goal, you know, it talks about engaging in proactive economic development. And then I think if you tie positioning the city as a destination of choice. And so part of that to me is being a choice for developers, for investors in the city, however that may be, public-private partnerships, strictly private investment, regional partnerships, whatever that may be. So, you know, you may have a point that it may be a wordsmithing, maybe connecting phrases differently.
Yeah, I guess part of it is I would agree if it was for the whole city, but I guess I see the residential area as somewhat separate from the business area. And so I feel like I can be home, and then I can come down to the town center or any of the shopping areas, which are a destination, but I certainly wouldn't want being a destination to change the character of Mill Creek.
Yeah.
I see where Councilmember Todd's going, and I kind of agree. So the way I interpret this is that we're simply, with economic prosperity, we are simply looking for those, like, for those fringe dollars. We're competing with Bothell. We're competing with the city of Everett, Lynnwood, for these restaurant destinations, these nightlife bar dollars destinations, now indoor soccer destinations. So that's what I took this to mean, and perhaps some wordsmithing might be a little bit better here, but that's kind of where I went with it. So that's why when you push for economic prosperity and tourism, that's what I meant with it. So.
But it almost makes me wonder if the wordsmithing almost needs to be a lead-in sentence to all of the goals. We're talking about balancing, you know, achieving these different objectives or focuses without sacrificing one to gain the other. Right.
The economic reality.
Services can we provide the residents of Mill Creek that they would be willing to pay?
That was me. Okay. I was just, you know, thinking, I think of my strategy and all my ideas were, how can we continue to find new ways to ensure a successful financial future for our city? And one thought was, is there anything that we could provide that we're currently not providing that would mean so much to our citizens that they'd be willing to pay for it, if they ask for it? I don't know what the answer is, but it was just kind of a thought mode of, okay, we're meeting all the current needs. Are we meeting anything that no other city meets or that or we're not meeting for our residents?
I like that way of thinking. That's the type of thinking that we had landed on passports. Cities didn't do that. It was necessary, and somehow, and then even when we started it out, there was a lot of, oh, this isn't really going to work. It's not going to be, it won't last. It might be, you know. So that thinking is how we found passports.
Here in the middle, attract employers of knowledge workers, retain, grow, residents with above average household income and wealth. Need to develop and execute program that creates ongoing or
so I touched on, I think I wrote wise choices with existing opportunities. And kind of where I was going with that was East Gateway, Dawson Remlard, on and on, our existing properties, our existing opportunities that are still out there, to not simply look for the quick dollar, that our vision has to be driving us home with this, and what we're doing here and now has to tie directly into that. And that's how, you know, you will maintain that level of prosperity, in my opinion.
So, first one here is identify options for Dobson Remillard property
and economic development opportunity.
Explore options with the Everett School District for the SR527 property. And then maximize partnership opportunities. Can we create favorable incentives to attract new industry members?
Engage the
Economic Alliance of Snohomish County in our local economic development efforts.
We have a responsibility to provide the greatest opportunity for our businesses to thrive.
Continue to be small business friendly and establish an outreach strategy to the current local businesses.
I didn't write that last one, but I really like that last one a lot. That's smart thinking.
So that's the one that I wrote. I don't want to keep being a dead horse because I've brought it up a couple times, but I love the idea because I hang out around here and I use all the different local coffee shops and all the different local shops here, and I try to have meetings at different places around the city just to get to know the business owners in the area. And even just a couple days ago, the newsroom is kind of new. I met him, the couple owners there, and I kind of brought up just how was your guys' experience here as business owners, and I just they've never met a council member, and they've never met anyone that works for the city. So I think it'd be a really cool idea to have some type of, how we would set it up, that I don't have the answer, but a way to really outreach all these business owners and get to know what their experience was like, to develop, whether it's just building all we have,
right,
to be very friendly to, that's why I say continue to be friendly to our small businesses. But they have like six owners, maybe one of their owners has, yeah, a bunch of owners.
I was there the day they opened.
Well, I know we featured them on social media when they opened. I think one of the challenges that's kind of unique in this community is we don't have a chamber. And so normally you would work, the city works with the chamber for business retention, business recruitment, and dealing with issues of concerns for the business because there's someone speaking with one voice for the businesses. So we do that through the Mill Creek Business Association, the Town Center Business Association. But getting to your point, it also requires like kind of a lot of individual conversations, which is hard because you're trying to get that one voice and kind of work on an agenda. And it's certainly not insurmountable. It's just different. And it just requires a kind of non-traditional approach because it's a non-traditional system here.
Yeah, and I don't know if it would take what.
Yeah, no, I think it's great, but I think what we could do is really engage, you know, with the MCBA to host something specific for categories of businesses or size of businesses and kind of collaborate and work on those private-public partnerships that we talked about in some of the other brainstorming. So.
Standards to enhance economic success, for example, high ceilings on the first floor. Use data to drive decisions. I don't know how I got that one in there, but it's a good point. Maintain and adjust zoning development regulations to grow the economy. not short-term gain. Understand the complete picture of Mill Creek's local economy. Support and or perpetuate businesses, investors' returns.
I'd like to see us be thinking long-term. Too many times you'll see development and you get down the road and it's 20 years and you go, who the heck did that? Who authorized that? And there's some things that we can do to change design standards, for instance, to make certain types of development economically profitable or to make it work, such as much as I'm not a fan of apartments, they're finding that if they have first floor higher ceilings, that can be help the bottom floor retail be successful, but the low ceilings limits what you can do. And that's certainly something you see in cities around us. And not take the quick buck just because, oh, somebody wants to do something. But if it doesn't fit with our long term, then we're here for the city. And the town center, when it first happened, if we hadn't stood up, it would all be a wall of apartments. We wouldn't have a town center. So I just think it's important that we be thinking long term and what is our vision, and then we have to stick to it.
Well, and I think that's why this process is so important, because that's really what we really haven't solidified yet is what that long-term vision is, and that's what we're trying to do through this process. I also think that it's not only important to think long-term, but it's also important to think beyond Mill Creek, because the city has grown to a point now you're not 3,000 residents with a lot of undeveloped land. You're 20,000 residents with a lot of build-out, and we really, part of our long-term planning has to take into account everything that's going on around us that touches us, that will impact us. And that hasn't been a traditional part of our planning, and I think now it's really important that it is. And we spend a lot of time talking about that as we're looking at capital project planning. You know, when you're planning out 10, 15, 20 years, the time we spend with community transit, you know, and what are they doing? Because those things will impact us, and we have to plan for that in our long-term planning and incorporate all of that into that long-term vision that you're coming up with.
That's it. Yeah, I'd like to go back to Councilmember Todd's comment at the beginning, and I totally agree with you on whatever we do create, it needs to be created for the city, for our residents. It's who we serve, it's who we're here for. But I also look at the economic prosperity, and really what every city, business, individual has when they look at economic prosperity is something that can be an ongoing revenue generating type of program. And relatively new to this, I see a lot of our revenue coming from developments and one-offs and, you know, opportunities for revenue as we see them. But truly, to be prosperous, if we can create something that is ongoing and perpetuating, in other words, the revenue isn't a one-time, it's once it starts, it keeps going. And so tourism does give you that opportunity. When you do come up with something that serves the needs of the community and yet enhances people from outside the community to come in, that's that strong, robust tourism programs that do set us apart, enhance us as a place to live, but also as a destination to visit for whether it be sports or the arts or whatever it might be. I think tourism is that. I think there's a. I'd love to find something else if we could, but to me, that's the one ongoing economic vehicle that I see that continues and isn't a once we've sold it or once we've developed it, or I mean even the beauty of the passports. It's, you know, you need a passport. You get a passport. And it isn't, you know, it's generating revenue, but it's a one-time hit. But if we could create something that's an ongoing revenue generator, that's true.
I think, too, that it's a lead time, right? I mean, one of the reasons we want to do, like, a six-year financial forecast is because we want to see on an operating level, where are you 6 years out? Because we need to start planning now to how we're going to fund year six and then the years after that. And you need lead time to ramp up to that. But to your point, Councilmember Todd's point, I also don't think, you know, it's all or nothing. And I think one of the things that I really hope comes about through this process is we see multiple opportunities to fulfill the goals. And so even when we talk about tourism, we've talked about it right now in relation to sports tourism, but we have other opportunities that really go to enhancing the quality of life for the residents here, even in that tourism category. One asset, if you will, that the city has is wetlands, and there's a lot of ecotourism opportunities. You know, I've worked in jurisdictions that have built canoe launches in wetlands and boardwalks and have a lot of different opportunities for the residents to enjoy that and capitalize on that. And it's really a different type of park. And that can also bring people who want to explore that or explore it while they're here doing something else. But there is a plethora of opportunity here that can benefit the city in terms of infusion of additional dollars into the city through sales tax, but also can enhance quality of life that can fall under that bigger umbrella.
That's it?
All of those,
that's it?
You guys did a good job. That was like a lot of brainstorming on that one.
Let me throw out another thought that sometimes it's helpful to plan what the future might be like. It's hard to think out in the future, but if you say today, look backwards, what were we? So in 1983, our local economy consisted of single-family residences and a golf course. And Albertsons, and maybe not even much more, you know, when we incorporate. Yeah, I'm not even sure if those were open in 83. Maybe they were. But anyway, those of us who've been a long time. So our local economy was bedroom community, and that was Mill Creek. Over a period of time, we wanted to say, okay, instead of having to go to the one La Palmera in the old location or Albertson or whatever, Olson's, yeah, whatever it was, or even for kids to go to school. We ended up getting schools, we ended up getting shopping, we ended up getting kinds of things that were helped our local economy in terms of what residents wanted, but also brought other people in. So we've continued to do that. But the point is our economy is still kind of lopsided. You know, we don't have big retail, and that was one of the dreams we had for EGO at one point was, well, maybe a big box retailer, Target, along with the library, kind of a cool idea, was going to be a way to bring people from other places in here and leave their sales tax dollars. We've talked about other kinds of wishes over the years, but if you think about it, we don't have, and I had that one about knowledge workers. A lot of our zoning a long time ago was hoping for office kinds of things. That's going through a huge dip. Well, things have changed, and there's opportunities, I think, for us as being between a regional growth center called Payne Field and a regional growth center called Canyon Park. We're in between. Yes, we're a bedroom community, but would people like to work here instead of commuting to Seattle? Instead of being half an hour from Seattle, we're now an hour and a half or 2 hours from Seattle. Are there opportunities for us to get the knowledge workers here? Is there a way to get some more daytime population for our restaurants who do pretty well in the evenings but not so good at the lunch crowd because there's only a few employers in town? The school district's the biggest one. City of Mill Creek is probably up there, and it's kind of sad. We're only 50 of us, and we're one of the largest employers in town. So that's some of my comments were understanding more about the local economy, what we've got here ourselves, and then also how we fit into the close regional economy, because we're kind of right in the thick of things now and what opportunities are in and around that. And so I don't know, I'm trying to think about how do you balance this out, because a lot of local economies, you're looking for local employment and residences and services and goods and entertainment and recreation. And we still don't have that local employment.
I agree with that. And I also think, too, it's really important. And, you know, I kind of have this, it has this feel sometimes in the city that, you know, we're rich in history and we know where we came from. But I don't know how much recognition there is for where we really are today. And I think this goes to your positioning statement. Where are we positioned? And I think you have to know your reality to be able to position your future and protect your future. And I think that's, you know, what you're trying to do. I really liked the comment about how do you utilize design standards to protect your quality, because I think, you know, I think the mayor brought that up. And to me, you know, that really speaks with, one, you're dealing with reality in terms of what's around us, what's feasible, what's marketable, what's gonna happen. But how do you manage that in a way that you protect this identity that you've spent 35 years creating? And I thought that was a really great recommendation for how to do that. Because even the town center, you know, when I went back and I looked at the history and the starts and the restarts on that, it wasn't really until Hawthorne and the Reserve went in there and those rooftops that they had enough rooftops to make those things marketable. You look back, and I know, I don't know if your mother's ever told you this, my mother always was saying, you know, everything always works out for the best. And she was usually delivering that advice when she was telling me something I didn't want to hear. But, you know, you look back and you think about Walmart and, or Target, I guess, Target and the library and how that didn't work out. And at the time, it was probably a huge disappointment. But now you look at what online retail has done, the number of brick and mortar big boxes shutting down. You know, the stores closing with Macy's, Toys R Us, you know, all of these things. You may have been left with a really big vacant building. And so, you know, that may be something that's worked out for the best and gives you an opportunity now to take and really build something for your vision for the future.
Can you support the leadership? Can I make one last comment on tech when you have your retreat and your time? One of the things we might want to start looking at is what are the future challenges and opportunities that we should be thinking about today. We probably won't focus that much today, but 10 years from now, we could be very glad that we moved in that direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, Councilmember Todd brings up a good point about the community. It is a true negative to our community. Mm-hmm. It truly is. I mean, it's a horrible place to commute from to the mm-hmm. city of Seattle. What could we provide, or what could we do to change that, to enhance mm-hmm. that? Yeah, I know that the bus stations are, the parking's gone by 6:30 in the morning. So people can't even take a bus because they can't take mm-hmm. a car up there. Mm-hmm. Could we provide a shuttle service from this, mm-hmm. from the communities to get people up there so they have a place? You know, that's something that you don't really think about, but maybe it's a service that we provide, or kind of thinking that what other challenges are affecting us that could actually lead to a new business or a new revenue or a new enhancement.
If it can generate revenue for our city and also provide a better life for our residents, that's a double hit.
Right.
And I think challenges and opportunities and negatives are actually great opportunities.
No, I completely agree. And how I personally, you know, see this evolving as, you know, kind of the step one is fleshing out these goals and the strategies, identifying, you know, brainstorming all these things that you've done. But then I think once we, you know, kind of have, right, the goals, the strategies, and the priorities or projects underneath them, then I think some of those things will evolve into separate long-term strategic plans that you are then doing that more traditional SWOT analysis rather than just looking at, okay, the whole city, what do, you know, swat it out, if you will. Then I think we're looking at, okay, Dobson Remillard. We want to create a vision for that. Well, then we get into more of that long-term vision SWOT analysis for that sports tourism bigger umbrella. And then with regard to kind of this, you know, the development, if we want to change development or zoning regulations or look at incentives, then I think that's something else that's kind of the SWOT. So maybe more of a targeted focus, depending on what we're talking about, where you're trying to create something that does have a 20-year vision to it and isn't just the next 5 years. So, well, comments well put. Any more on economic prosperity? Other than we just want to be prosperous? All right, leadership.
Sure, might as well. I can't remember which ones I did. Okay, you can have those. So for those listening online, this is not the 18 minutes of erased tape. This is just quiet. Was it 18 minutes? What was it?
What was her name? Rose.
She erased the Nixon tape? No, she didn't.
While we have a little respite period here, I want to again remind council, if you have not done it, the due date was March 23rd for PRA training and Open Public Meetings Act training. We only have two certificates in, so if you have done that, please verify with Gina. She has your information. Councilmember, need to make sure she has your information, because as a newly elected official, you have to have it by the end of March.
So I've done it. How do I tell her that I've done it?
Well, I think there's some forms and stuff.
You can go to the AWC site and look under your CML credits, and it would show that you took that class, and just tell. Yeah, because you took the whole the.
What if you just go to the Attorney General's website?
But he went to the class, the AWC class, and so the CML is the Certificate of Municipal Leadership. They logged the fact you took that class.
And so, log in.
Mm-hmm.
What's
that? The AWC class that you went to has the PRA.
Yeah, that's
a whole hour chunk.
Yeah.
But that was like last November or something. But I mean, that would give you the certification you were there.
Okay. I have record of that then.
Well, you should do.
Yeah.
Literally. We have logged that as Exhibit A.
Everywhere in case he's stopped on the street.
The I think our
it's 90 days from when you took the oath of office.
Right. That's. Oh, I'm sorry. 31 days in March. March 30th. March 31st. My bad. So.
That's what I'm doing this weekend.
That's what I thought, sir.
We're talking about this, right?
Yes, we have yours. We have Brian's. So excellent.
Did everybody finish their more? Security training?
You did. Very nice job. Two more. We need two more.
I got well, 25 minutes. I kept booting me off.
Sorry to your time or something. Security thing for don't do stupid things on my computer. That was a couple months ago.
So I don't know. I had no problem, but I did. We had every city employee's done it, and 5 out of 7 councils. So we're almost at 100%.
Yeah, Mark, you got a good fish.
So leadership, I want to start in this leadership group right here, lead by example. Great leadership directs, but doesn't need to do. It inspires others to take responsibility. Leadership is strategic first and tactical second. And I coupled this on there since we're talking strategic first. Strategic vision for the city that is well articulated and engaging. So some leadership and strategy pieces there together.
Those were never the first ones for my in that, you know, when I think about leadership, I just think about creating action and getting things done, moving ahead. Great leadership is not about creating action, it's about yourself. It's about creating engagement.
It's getting people to lead, getting people to inspire, getting people to do and not for you to do. And the biggest hole most of us fall into in a leadership role when we talk about leadership is that we don't think strategically, we think tactically, we think about actions. We think about things that need to get done. And if we really focus on the strategy and can gain agreement, it's the hardest thing in the world to do. It's a lot easier just to list off a bunch of stuff to do. It's very hard to talk about strategically where the city's going to go, what we envision, what we want, what we would all what we'd be able to write down and say that would mean the same thing to everyone. That's very hard to do. But once you've done that, the power of that from a leadership role is amazing, because then everybody understands, they believe, they're engaged, and they decide to perform their own actions based on that strategy. And now all of a sudden you've got this huge animal moving all in the same direction.
I mean, we can come up with 1,000 metaphors of leadership, what it means to us to be a good leader, but good leaders simply get out of the way so that people can do their jobs. You know, we're there as a resource. That's all good leaders are. So maybe I didn't put that down on paper, but it's a tough topic to put one word or one or two words on there. So it's, but we get it.
What can I do to help? Next little group down here, look to cities and other states who are doing innovative things that may work for us. And along that line, identify, be informed about matters that impact our mission and vision. So they're, you know, we're opening our mind and looking for those issues out there. And then don't be afraid to take calculated risks. You know, kind of looking out there for new things, opening our minds, seeing what other people are doing, and take a chance.
I would just say, I think when you're talking about leadership, and if you go to our mission to set the standard of excellence, you know, I like this, don't be afraid to take calculated risks, because if you're truly leading, sometimes you're going to be at the front of the pack, and you might be doing something for the first time no one's done. And you know, I think going to Councilmember Bond's comments, when you started passports, people may be like, oh, that'll never work. And look where it is now. You know, sometimes you have to be, you know, willing to go out there and defend something that hasn't been tried and adjust. If needed. I like that comment.
Those were the couple that I wrote, and that's what I was thinking was the passport situation that Councilmember Vaughn brought up when I wrote that, which was you didn't necessarily expect it to be what it is for the city, and now it's something that other cities probably looked at or are already implementing because of what we did. And that's the idea.
This corners a little collaboration outside of our city. Individual council members must be involved regionally. Healthy relationships with our neighbors, policymakers, electeds, for example. Those relationships are essential to achieve maximum success. Identify, foster, and utilize partnerships or shared goals. Engage and or influence, emphasis, or actively participate in local, regional, etc. groups. Not just observe. Engage and influence, not just involve. Not just observe, observe. So, collaboratively outside of our city. Beyond, have a larger presence in Olympia, use our council to lobby for state monies, and when we have time, more info involvement with the state legislature.
I
Well, and I think part of it is creating the strategies and knowing what the policies of the council are, because it's very hard for me to send staff out to engage electeds in Olympia without knowing what your policies are, what your vision is, what you want to see happen, because then it's just us speaking and not speaking for you. And, you know, that I think this, as the mayor alluded to, getting these things done this year is important to be able to do those kinds of things.
So I wrote one of those about having a presence in Olympia. I was more referencing, and this could just be ignorance to our form of council versus other forms of council, but working in Olympia, I've noticed that other city council members, so they leverage their council, their elected officials, us, to go down and talk with the other elected officials and lobby for those things. I don't know if our form of government just does it differently and that wouldn't be appropriate for
us. No, I think it's appropriate. I think we do it. I think there's two issues with that. One, we tend to do it through our body, AWC. So, like, Councilmember Todd goes with, I know for the last couple years, has gone, like, to, what is it called, the Olympia Days or something?
City Action Days.
Action Days, thank you. And with all the elected officials, I know that individual council members have done that with individual legislators on projects. I think what the difference is in a municipal form of government as opposed to like the legislature is that the individual elected official is speaking for the council as a body. So they're, you know, if you're there lobbying or if staff is lobbying for something, so we have to know what the council as a body wants. And so I think that's what a large part of this process does. And it's what having a capital improvement does. You know, if we know 7 years out we want this project, then we all know every opportunity to get funding for that project we're all on board with because we've already gone through that planning process. And so I think that's just kind of been the disconnect. I think people have done good work individually in absent kind of a vision, a mission, goals, a direction. And so I think that's what will actually help all the elected officials have more impact, is because then it's seven people talking about the same projects or the same priorities or the same objectives.
Or even just one, but we all have a voice through that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the difference between us and a Bothell and a Kirkland, because I worked in the first district, I was a staff person, and so having all of the council members from Kirkland and Bothell and seeing the difference between what happened in the budget, in this year's budget for Kirkland and for Bothell versus Motley Terrace and Pryor, which are also cities in the first district, seeing the difference between what projects they got funded versus the other two cities, and comparing that to how often we saw their council members and their mayors, that was eye-opening to me. So the difference is what you're saying is that Bothell and the Kirklands, they have this established plan, and they know what they want, and what their priority is, and we're kind of getting there.
Right.
Okay.
So
that's exactly right.
So life is all about relationships, and the better your relationships are, obviously, the more it can benefit you. We're blessed. We've got former council members from here, John Levick, Mark Harmsworth, Terry Ryan. They're all in positions outside of the city that can benefit us. We've had times. Steve Hobbs has been very good to us. People in this room have built relationships with him. And so the time to build that relationship is not when you need the project funded. That to go down on the day before the vote and say, "Hey, you haven't met me, but I'm a big supporter of yours."
Right.
The relationships get built well in advance of the ask, and then the ask is not even really a part of it. So we are doing better than historically we have done in building those relationships. Mike's been very active. Pam. I have not done as much, but I try to be aware of those people and make a connection at some point when the opportunity is there, because that's building that relationship before you need them is far more effective.
No, I think that's
especially being there when they need you.
Right. I think that's an excellent point, is that we do a lot of hosting of legislators here. It's not just during the session in Olympia, even though I think what you're saying is important, but you know, absent kind of plan. I mean, we're trying to constantly, going back to some of your other brainstorming, educate what's going on, where are we going, what are we doing. And it is the relationship, and it's continuous. It's not a one and done. So that's a good point.
Anybody's going to Olympia, I'll drive.
Lights and sirens, we get there in 2 hours? Is that
So bring this back even more local now. This is add local leadership to our goals. For example, local nonprofits, local service organizations, and school districts.
Our goal doesn't have the word local in there. And I think local leadership is really important, so I think we need to add that in. And a couple of examples, and it doesn't like we have to lead, but I think we can facilitate, like John was talking about earlier. Look at the AMVET chapter thing. The AMVET chapter started because we kind of did some Memorial Day events and built a little place in over a couple of years, and so people kind of came together and said, we're going to do this. So we kind of hosted them, but now that's off and running. Everett School District, you know, the SRO program, the DARE, I heard you guys talk about that earlier. You guys have had, you cops have had a huge influence on our community through those programs that are leadership things, and whether you run them or whether you just do them. And all things you're talking about are kind of local leadership stuff. So I didn't want us to miss out on the local opportunities to get people to rise up and do things. And I think what John was saying earlier about having everybody understand that where they can contribute and participate, and this is important. So I wanted to throw that in there. I think we should add that to our goal.
That's a good point.
And the last two kind of go together. Maintain open government and create a City of Mill Creek Resident Satisfaction Index that provides feedback and updated level of satisfaction.
That was my weird idea. A satisfaction index in leadership. If you're leading a group, if you are willing to put out there, you know, tell us how we're doing, and update it on a regular basis to say, here's the level of satisfaction. You know, 1 year later, 2 years later, however often, are we growing? Are we getting better? Are we getting worse? How are we doing as leaders? Or are we doing in improving or focusing? And it's just with technology nowadays, those are relatively easy to execute. And they're really good to publish and to put out there for the world to see how we're doing.
No, I don't think that's crazy. In fact, several governments do that as part of their budget and their performance metrics. And they have those community surveys that they either build in-house or they use like Baldrige or some of those. So.
That's it.
One more to go next week, long-term planning.
Huh?
We're just going to do one.
Just write C everything.
You'll see my other post-its.
Really disappointing. We decide we have no value in that.
All right, well, thank you.
Good job, Chief. Thank you.
Despite what you may have read, I'm still the chief.
Okay, next up is public records access, new management rules and policies, city manager.
All right, thank you. So, first of all, I'd just like to, actually, Gina, can you,
I'm on it.
You are just a step ahead as usual, my friend. As the council is aware, we brought to you in January the Public Records Act policy. Records management probably is something I'm passionate about just to satisfy the nerd in me, but I'm committed to getting records organized here and transparent. And I just want to take, before we get into this, I really want to take a moment and thank and commend Gina, because she has really been my partner in crime in this, along with James. And Gina, you'll hear the term lean, and we just had a real a leadership retreat talking about lean as a philosophy in the city But it is a part of her DNA, and that's really important as we're looking at not just how to store documents, but how to archive them, how to process them in the city, how to make them efficient, how to make them transparent. And so some of setting up the guardrails is really not fun work, and part of that is this policy has been several months in the making, and she's been right there with Scott Masal and I as we've worked on this. For Council Members Mead and Steckler, I just wanted to kind of orient you for a brief moment before we get into the policies. One of the things, some of the orientation materials I gave you just talked about how there's really a citywide need to update and bring current ordinances, policies, procedures. And so, you know, creating a system for that is how we had to start. And so the first thing the council and I worked on was really a policy governing policies, if you will, and updating the ordinance that defines how that's done in the city. There was kind of a paper stack of policies, and that was one of the problems, is that they weren't just old, but they were in paper, and so they weren't really accessible to the employees, much less the public. And so one of the things that we did is we worked with Code Publishing, and so they publish our municipal code, and we work with them to actually codify and publish the policies as we're updating them and reviewing them. And so if you go to our website and you go to where the city code is, you'll see the city policy manual that we're building. So every time we adopt one of these or the council adopts a policy, then it gets codified and it goes into this electronic policy manual, if you will, just like we have an electronic code. And so we're building that architecture, and right now it's been on the 100 and 200 series is what we've worked on. But the rest of the council is aware of this because they worked on the policy and they saw the presentation on the codification. But I just kind of wanted to bring you all up to speed that it wasn't just taking a few policies here and here and updating an already established manual. We're basically creating a manual from scratch, and we've tried to do that in an electronic format. So, with that being said, if Scott Masal could join us, because he has certainly been doing the heavy lifting when it comes to drafting. What we did provide to you in your packet was a red line copy, just because of the length of this. You could see the changes made since the last time that you reviewed this. Since the last time we had this conversation, if you'll recall, we talked about the various sources we looked at in putting this together. One of those was the AG's Model Rules, Public Records Act. We talked a little bit about how those were in the process of being updated. And they have since been adopted, the updated model rules from the AG's office. And so we have gone back and reviewed those in conjunction with this final draft. I had a few questions from when the packet went out, and so as far as links and how they're activated, that'll actually be effectuated through Code Publishing, and they'll help us as far as the best way. The appendix, there were a couple questions on the appendices. Appendix 4 is I think it's a section log, if I recall. When you do not release a record because a privilege exists or because it is exempt by a state statute or some other provision, then when you issue a set of records, you have to issue an exemption log with that. It's part of state law, and it is just part of general practice when you're disclosing records as well. We, for purposes of tonight, we've kind of given you an example, and we're going to provide the staff with examples. We probably will go and update this as we find some recent, relevant, and pertinent exemptions that we've done recently. But we're going to give the staff an example because it's a little bit of a legal practice, and so we don't want the staff guessing how to fill this out. So that's kind of what that is. Appendix 5 is really a decision form. If someone appeals a denial. If they make a records request, we deny the records request based on an exemption or some other reason. Then we've created an administrative procedure within the policy to just have a check and balance to make sure we review that before it goes to a judicial level. We did have a signature block on there for the PRO, the public records officer, the designated officer, but on an appeal, that person would actually not be part of the decision-making process. So we will probably change that from a signature line to a copy line to make sure they're aware of the decision and it gets effectuated appropriately. And then Gina and James and I are looking at public records software. We actually have a grant, fingers crossed, in with the state on this first round of funding to see if we can get some money for that. And once we get some information about what is going to be, if anything, funded and what software we ultimately utilize, then we'll look about how best we want to integrate that into the website. So I'll be looking for more information coming on that. This is really a foundation, I think, when I worked with all of the council in my transition when I moved to Washington and took this job. You know, what I heard over and over and over again is public records and liability associated with public records. All of you schooled me on that really well. Scott did as well. And, you know, I think this is something that's really important that the city has never had, is a policy and a procedure governing how this work is done and creating that code section. I would also like to thank Scott. This is endless hours of quality time he and I have had together, and this is months of work. This kind of work doesn't happen overnight and takes a lot of patience, and it's a lot of attention to detail. And he and I have talked a lot about words and commas and semicolons and order of precedence of what goes where, and getting into really geeking out on the writing. So he and I had a good time, but I will say it's time to put this baby to bed. So we will, at this point, because this is coming back to you a second time, I just wanted to pause here and entertain any questions. Scott and I are available to ask questions if you have additional questions due to the changes from the first draft you saw in January.
I looked through and asked a bunch of those questions, so thank you. I just now spotted another one.
Okay.
On page 1 of 39, the third whereas, it says, right there is bold, Exhibit 2, and then after that, parenthetically, it says PRA policy, and I think it's actually Public Records Rules is the name of that. And the only reason I caught that is because I was looking for consistency other places. I think, because there's places where it talks about public record rules and the PRA policy in our...
Anyway,
I think there's a Scribner's error, potentially, so I don't think it's a big deal, but I'm just stuck out to me.
Yeah, so good catch. But it was intended to be just a convenient label.
Yes.
That was shorter than public records rules.
Yeah.
And that's why we defined it. So it says public record in the third whereas. It identifies that that we have a new city policy entitled Public Records Rules attached, blah, blah, and we're going to call that for purposes of this ordinance the PRA policy. So it's just a label of convenience in the ordinance that identifies the rules.
I took it since it said Exhibit 2, parentheses, PRA policy. I thought that meant the title of Exhibit 2 was PRA policy, and it's really Public Records Rules, which
it is
the name of our, I don't know, anyway.
All right, well.
In the comments Rebecca made earlier, I had a good discussion with Gina yesterday, because Gina's the one that has to actually do a lot of this stuff. Right now, if you go to our website and click on Public Records, it drops you into Request Tracker, which is our substitute place to catch this stuff for now. And I think Gina and I already talked about there's some things she may want to do short term to make sure it captures all the information that we need. Like, it doesn't presently ask you if it's a commercial list or not, so she can add that in, I'm sure. But then, like Rebecca said earlier, it's, you guys, short term there's some things you could do. Longer term will kind of depend on what kind of software you get. But right now, if somebody clicks on it today, it drops you right into Request Tracker. So I'd love us if we could do something temporary to say, here's where you find the policy. It's the link to the whatever you showed us earlier, I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
So that people could read the full rules and so they know what they're doing. Because right now, if you don't know much about it, you might not know how to fill out that form or what you're getting yourself into.
And I think, you know, request tracker was just an evolution from what we had, which was just send an email. And so we were like, okay, well, we don't have a log. And so it's that continuous improvement. You're absolutely right. So, like, that's one step better. Now we need the next step better. And it's that process. And it's also order of magnitude. What do we spend time on for the biggest bang for our buck as we're working our way through this process? And you know, it seems like it shouldn't be that difficult, but when you talk about it, you're talking about a massive amount of information to manage. And we're not just asking staff to step in and manage an established system. We're actually establishing the system, if you will. And I think that is really a product of our age. You know, we're relatively young compared to a lot of our sister cities, and so we're kind of going through this for the first time. But I do think this is one of the important policies that was on my big need to get done list.
It looks really good. Thanks for all the hard work.
So then we need a motion to adopt ordinance 2018-826.
Two motions, actually. One, if I may, Mayor, just making a quick reference. We actually have fees contained, as you'll recall, within the policy. And because we have a code section in the municipal code that sets forth different fees, we actually need to amend the fee schedule in the municipal code. So we actually have two ordinances for your consideration. As I recall, right, Scott, I think we put two separate, yes.
Yeah.
So motion to adopt ordinance 2018-826, establishing regulations and policies implementing the Public Records Act, RCW Chapter 4256, adopting new Mill Creek Municipal Code Chapter 2.06, approving a new PRA policy, issuing an order relating to maintenance of a public records index, and establishing an effective date. I'll stop there.
Based on all of that, I'll make those two motions.
That's one. That's
one motion.
You have to do this again.
2018-826, then, is that what it was?
Yes. This is the first one, 826.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Opposed?
Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
And then the second is a motion to adopt ordinance 2018-827. Amending Mill Creek Municipal Code Chapter 3.42, fees and other assessments for the purpose of adding and adopting fees, costs, charges, and other assessments applicable to actions taken in conformance with the State Public Records Act, RCW Chapter 4256, and the Mill Creek Public Records Management Regulations, MCMC Chapter 2.06, and establishing an effective date.
Okay, so moved.
So we have a motion and a second. New discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Now we're up to item D, adoption of ordinance approving a new city policy regarding reimbursement of business expenses. City Manager.
Thank you. Council, at your February 13th meeting, you looked at the first draft of the business expense policy. And this, as you'll recall, is the last draft of this policy was in 1991. So this is another one that we're updating. And this is really less for legal reasons and more for audit reasons. And so we have expenditures in the normal course of business for the city that, you know, we continually get ping that we need an updated policy on. And so this is really meant to address that. I'm sorry I don't have a redline version, but because I reordered a lot of things, it became a massive color and not very helpful. So I just wanted to kind of highlight. I removed from our discussion in February the carpool requirement. So that has been removed. I made various language edits. We reorganized the order of the sections, and we updated most significantly Section 8, which includes now a documentation requirement to make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's. And really, we tried to address every potential meal with meeting scenario that could occur, and this is really prophylactic, and we're not saying these will routinely occur, but if it does occur, then you want to be able to show you have a policy authorizing that, and that's what the auditors ask for, is a policy authorizing these types of expenditures. We scoured, I don't know, probably 8 to 10 policies in other cities, trying to glean every kind of meal with meeting opportunity there was out there. We looked through the MRSC website of policies that they promoted to kind of come up with that list. We also get recommendations from the auditors to have an updated policy with regard to employee and volunteer recognition. And so, you know, when we have employee appreciation, if we provide breakfast at an all-employee meeting, that's okay, but we need a policy saying that. If we give out pen sets for years of service, that's okay, but we just needed a policy saying that. The volunteers, I think we had a conversation one time about the youth advisory board buying their sweatshirts or whatever, you know, where we need a policy saying it's okay to do that. And then, you know, included with that, in part, based on our discussion with City Logo Award, I just, because it kind of falls under employee appreciation, you know, I included in here opportunities to provide employees with our logo wear on their hire date and anniversary date or for appreciation or working events to provide that to council when you all attend the festival, when you all attend a city event. We want to be able to promote the city, but we just need something that says we can give this thing that costs this much to people. So that's why that's in there. Again, it's prophylactic, if you will. And then even though this is covered in state law, auditors wanted to see it in policy, is a recovery of disallowed charges. So if you have to reimburse something, we just need a policy that says you can reimburse something. There is a state statute on it, so I'm not sure that I agree it really needs to be in the policy because we can't supersede a state statute, but, you know, if it's going to make everyone happy, then we'll put it in there. So we have included that. I am going to stop there for a minute to see if there are questions on this. This should be pretty reflective of just what you see in vouchers. It's just documenting that those practices that we've had are okay.
I think it's really good, and thanks for reminding us about the carpool requirement. I remember we were troubled by that, and it difficult for council members in particular, but you're right, it's not in here at all anymore. And before, I think it required people to take a carpool. You still could have a practice of,
yes,
gosh, we've got two employees both going to Olympia for something or other, let's take a city car and go. But it is not in the policy that they have to do that because you don't know, somebody might be coming from Seattle and somebody else is coming from Arlington.
So I've left that to director discretion. That is their scheduling training. That, you know, if Greg has two officers going to the police academy, he could say you both are traveling because you live next door to each other, or no, you could go separately because you lived opposite ends of the county or whatever. So we just kind of left that to management discretion, and then I can evaluate management decisions, but we don't make it a violation if you don't follow the policy.
Okay, that's great. This looks really good. You know, you said this is not different, but I, you know, as long as I've been on council, it's been kind of like, well, okay, now what can we do? What can't we do? Even as council members, so can I get reimbursed for going to the SEC meeting? Well, you know, the mileage, I don't know. You know, so we've kind of all been kind of loosey goosey. So this is great. And I know a lot of other agencies are probably business things too. You know, here's the rules and here's the forms, but the rules are the important thing. You know, here's what you're allowed to put in and here's what you aren't. So this is great that now there's that set of rules we can hand to people, so there's no question, no concern, no anxiety about it.
Well, and a lot of it is just, you know, getting on paper, and, you know, I wish things could happen faster than they do, but, you know, policy, it takes time to think through it and organize it, and we also, on Scott's recommendation, have in here an update to our municipal code. You know, one thing I recognize, and I think Scott would concur with this, the code, it looks like to me, was largely written at incorporation to just kind of mirror existing state statutes at the time. Is that fair?
That's my guess, yes. It wasn't perfect.
Well, no, I mean, it would certainly start. So as we do policies, then we're looking at concurrent code sections and updating those as appropriate. And so in this case, we looked at our code that only really authorized reimbursement of expenses for officials and, you know, not employees. Well, certainly we mean to include employees, so we want to correct that. What I would think is probably a Scribner's error, you know, in the original ordinance. So we would, well, before I make, read out the proposed motion, let me say the other thing I'm trying to do as we go through these policies, there are not a lot, but there are some things that have actually been put into a policy format in the past. And so when I think it relates to something we're updating the policy on, I'm recommending you repeal. And so there's two of those prior policies related here. One dates back to 1997, which was a repeal of a policy that basically allowed employees to the city to purchase personal computers for them and then for them to reimburse the city. I mean, the city was in essence financing it. And I think, you know, it's hard in this day and time to say, why would we do that? But if you look at 1997 and kind of the advent of laptops and personal technology, desktops, that was kind of a new thing. And I, what I would surmise is that they were probably trying at that time to trigger employee engagement and skills and get people accustomed to that. We don't really use this anymore, but it's on the books, so technically someone could, and so I want to kind of get it off the books. The same thing.
I can vouch for what you just said.
Okay.
I experienced it. In fact, I purchased a computer. it was exactly done to do what you're saying. We're going to have computers. Nobody had them. We're not used to them. They were $3,000 for boat anchors now. And wanted you to be, the more computer savvy you were playing at home, the more likely you could come into the office and maybe do a little more than what you were otherwise.
And likewise, they had a policy from 2004, which was, again, basically purchasing firearms. And as I understand the history behind this, I guess they had some female officers that had smaller grips, and so they wanted to purchase weapons with smaller grips. You know, really, that's something the city should have provided, and there's a lot of liability when it comes to firearms. And so this is something, even if we were still using it, I'd recommend we repeal for liability purposes. But I did verify that we actually aren't using this, or there's no one actively doing these things. It's a matter of just getting them off the books. And so I would actually propose for council consideration tonight three motions. The first being a motion to adopt ordinance number 2018-828, amending Mill Creek Municipal Code Chapter 2.08, rescinding prior code provisions, policies, and procedures concerning expense reimbursements, approving a new city policy regarding reimbursement of expenses, and establishing an effective date. And I'll stop there.
Do you want to move that?
Well, it wasn't just for small grips for women, by the way. A lot of the men wanted to go to the 45 for whatever reasons, and it was a way for them to. This agency saw the benefit of allowing people to carry guns that they were more comfortable with for whatever reasons, but recognized that it was cumbersome to issue those, so they set up a practice that made sense at the time.
Doesn't no, matter. I get it.
We've evolved beyond
that. We have evolved beyond that. You're exactly right.
So are you moving?
Sure. So moved.
Second. This is the expense policy.
Yes.
We have a motion.
I'm sorry.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
Then we would ask for two separate motions. The first, the motion to repeal City of Mill Creek Policy 97-006. Employee computer lease purchase programs that was effective as of July 8th, 1997.
I'd be happy to make that motion, commonly known as the Mark Bond boat anchor.
I was probably the last one to buy a computer.
Second. Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Opposed?
Abstentions? Passes unanimously. One more.
Motion to repeal City of Mill Creek Policy 2004-01, Police Officer Firearm Purchase Program, effective September 28, 2004.
Before we make that motion, I'm sorry. So there are no union issues, there are no demands to bargain or complaints to come forward with any of this, just to be sure of that? Thank you. That's all.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Unanimous. Okay, next item is the consent agenda. Approval of checks number 58310 through 58380 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $158,197.84. Audit committee, Mayor Pruitt, Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw, any exceptions?
No.
Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $293,797.07.
No exceptions.
No exceptions. And City Council meeting minutes of February 13, 2018. The motion to approve the consent agenda. The motion and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstention.
Passes unanimously. Down to reports, just two quick ones. One, Stellar Dentistry is now open, and
that's a really great
place for dentistry. And then I have already twice been to Brooklyn Brothers Pizza. And I can tell you there's worth the calories, and they're open until 9 o'clock tonight. So I may be stopping by.
Councilman
a quick report thanking Mom for flying all the way out here to Waverly Creek City Council meeting.
No report.
Board, and that's what I put in your packet. It was referred. It's referred to as DP2X. The sum and substance of this is this countywide planning policy would not require any swap. Back in 2010, the council came up with this ingenious idea that if you want to expand an urban growth area somewhere, you've got to contract it elsewhere, so you have no net gain in population capacity. I was being a little facetious when I said that. This policy is intended to address some fairly unique situations in different places where the UGA lines were drawn. There is a countywide planning policy, and I forgot to include that in the packet, that essentially talks about you have to have logical boundaries that are either based on topographical features or some other logical demarcation of the line. But we have a bunch of places throughout the county where you go down a road, one side it's rural, the other side it's urban. You've got some places where parcels are split. And you have other situations, and this policy isn't about this docket proposal that's pending, but you have situations where the county down here on 43rd, to alleviate the congestion that we all know and see and experience on 35th, is working to create a new north-south corridor on 43rd. That will send an urban road down through what is now a rural area. And so this is a policy that would allow the county in unique situations like that to bring
make adjustments to the urban growth boundaries to deal with those situations. The last point I would make about this is one of the things that, and the memo I attached is from Clay White, who is kind of the driving force behind this. There's been some concern expressed by the planners in various cities that this is going to open the Pandora's box to massive urban growth area expansions. So he put in language that the intent of this policy is to give the council authority to expand the UGA the minimum amount necessary to address the unique circumstance or to reconcile the irregularity in the UGA boundary. So trying to put some sideboards, some language in the sideboards on there. So this policy was referred by SCT down to the Planning Advisory Board. Planning Advisory Board got it after they had already made their recommendation on the first policy, but the county executive got to the Planning Advisory Board, and after they considered it, they decided not to take action. It is now coming before the SCT tomorrow night for discussion and for action. And so I am asking for the direction of the council as to what their pleasure is. And the last point I would make is Clay did include in this policy the same language that was in the other policy, that it would require the concurrence of the affected cities. So again, there's this perception out there that the council, the county council, in considering an expansion, may ram a proposal through despite the objections of a city that's affected by the expansion. And so I think Clay believed that implicitly that's not going to happen. I just don't see politically the county council taking an action that's not supported by the affected cities. So that's why I don't think there is any consternation about adding that language into the policy. So that's the policy that is before the SCT tomorrow. And looking for some guidance as to whether or not the collective council supports the policy, takes a position, doesn't take a position. And the last point I'll make, I think we were the only council last time, I think I conveyed this, that I think did it the right way, where we actually had a discussion about it, and the representative of the city went to the steering committee actually representing a recommendation of the elected body. I'm expecting it to be similar tomorrow night, but I can't change everything. So.
What's your recommendation?
I view these as tools in the toolbox. This doesn't mean any docket proposal is going to go forward or get approved. It's simply providing a tool for the council to address these types of situations. And I think with the sideboards requiring the concurrence of the city, so, you know, if this were used for the one that is being proposed down on the 43rd corridor, we would be an affected city. And under the way the policy is written, if it were adopted, the council wouldn't be able to go forward with it without the concurrence of without our concurrence.
So you want bobbleheads or a motion?
That's a real question, yeah.
Yeah.
I just had a question about, so you said the county executive steamrolled and had a different opinion. Could you expand a little bit?
The county executive is, I haven't heard many substantive objections to any of these policies. He wants to punt these until 2023 when the council takes up the next eight-year update. You know, my personal opinion is that's 5 years down the road, and we've already got an issue with these things facing us now. So that's the long and short.
They're
going to
build the road.
They're going to build the road of what happens with any of the docket proposals. So even if any of the docket proposals in that area don't go forward, the county is, I mean, they approved the contract with the engineers a month ago to proceed with the design of the road. That road is going forward and will extend 43rd down to Maltby Road.
And this just kind of gets something on the books with sideboards that helps us navigate it.
It allows the council to consider making a change to that boundary if they deem it appropriate, after doing a lot of environmental study.
So the experts on this, more expert than I, at least. You're more expert than I, than most of us here, but more expert than most of the councils who are then going to either explicitly or implicitly or no direction at all to the representatives like you for tomorrow night are probably not as smart as the planners. So I think SCT Steering Committee smartly said, let's put this to the planners, to the PAC group, and get some advice. And I would have expected them to either vote yay or nay, but no decision is a funny result.
And they recommended approval of the first one pretty unanimously, with the exception of our former community development director, and I think Kristen Kelly might have been the other. I'm not sure she's a member of the PAC, but.
So if the experts can't tell us yes or no, I'm really concerned. Are they, is this all politics, which it shouldn't be with those folks? I mean, this is scary.
It is all politics, because for whatever reason, the executive did not lobby the PAB when the first policy went to them in late October. And so we then referred this second policy down to them when we first got briefed on the first policy. And it went down to the PAB, and in that time, after they had already made a favorable recommendation on the first policy, the county executive made his viewpoints known, and that carried sway for whatever reason on the second policy.
So I could see how political animals at council members, sorry, maybe one of them, might not want to weigh in on something at SCT, but paid staff who are planning directors of all these cities not weighing in is funny to me. So I would turn, and Gina may not know, but I'm curious what Tom Rogers, our own expert, would tell us about the PAC's decision for no decision. That just doesn't, I don't know how you can not weigh in on something as the experts.
Well, I think before we get to that, I think part of that may be forms of government. Yeah, because I don't know how many of those have strong mayor forms of government, where your staff is working directly for elected officials as opposed to a council manager form of government. And so I do think that that impacts situations like that. That being said, I don't know how much input we have on this or background.
So then is the executive still vetoing on the basis that with the changes of the boundaries having to have a commonality?
I'm following you. He's not.
Remember, you said that's like North Sultan couldn't swap land with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, here, this is getting a bit into the weeds. I mean, it's some of us find it a little bit funny that the executive was opposing some of these policies, because when he was on the council in 2015, there were two UGA expansions that involved swaps, one up in Sultan and one in Stanwood, that he voted for. And now he's saying, oh, these are bad ideas, they're a big mess. So I can't speak, so now he's not really raising substantive objections to him. He's saying, well, let's look at this comprehensively in 2023. So there haven't been any substantive objections. I, too, was surprised that I expected the PAC to take it up like they did the first one, if for it to get to the steering committee, and we would have the same result, we're probably recommend against it, and then it's going to, and the other point is, it's going to go forward to the council, and they're going to make a decision whether to vote on it, regardless of what the recommendations are.
So the decision, so SCT is advisory to the county council on this?
Correct.
Anyway.
Correct. So it's not as if the steering committee, by voting against it stops. It was actually transmitted by the executive committee, indicating that the steering committee recommended against it, but the planning advisory board is the recommendation that the executive committee forwarded on to the council as the executive committee's recommendation.
So I'm thinking to city manager Paul's comments. I'm thinking back to the people who've approached me and questioned what our thinking was and why we voted the way we did. We're mayor, strong mayor counts, strong mayor cities. And so maybe that is indeed changes some of the back discussion I've heard.
I can guess who some of those people might have been.
Yeah, we're not going to name them, but yeah. So the snarky part of me says, if the PAC doesn't make a recommendation, then the SCT should just not make a recommendation and let the council do whatever they want to, because this is all political.
It has become political. It didn't start out that way, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, but at this point, for SCT to start taking positions, if we can't get the recognized experts to take a position, I don't know. I'd be tempted to abstain. Just because nobody really wants to follow, I don't know. The other part of me says, your comments were that the wording in here was similar to the policy, that the earlier policy we talked about, which we agreed with, which was going to give the cities yay or nay capability. I'm looking at DP2A, and it says following consultation with the affected cities or cities, and that is a local control issue. I'm not happy with that wording. I think it needs to be an agreement of the affected cities, not consultation, because that's been the problem in the past. They come and go, what do you think? And we go, we don't like it. And they go, well, we're going to do it anyway. So DP2A doesn't read the way you describe it.
If you read farther down on the next page under C, the proposed minor UGA expansion is not opposed by the city or cities whose UGA will be expanded by the minor expansion.
So I'm looking at the very first word under proposed new policy. The policy starts off with following consultation may approve. I'm concerned that people just read that first sentence and go for it, but maybe these other things are qualifiers.
There's that prefatory language that says you have to have the consultation with the affected cities, and then the council may approve an expansion if it finds that, A, one of two conditions exists, B, it's adjacent to territory characterized by urban growth, and C, the UGA of the city that's the UGA that's being expanded is not opposed by that city. So I think he didn't use the exact same language requiring the agreement. He kind of used the opposite negative, that it's not opposed by the city.
So I read paragraph one as being they don't have to get agreement from the city.
What if the city is opposing it?
Well, yeah, I guess I think we're just talking semantics. I think it says you've got to have the consultation to know whether or not they object or not, but the council's got to find, in order to approve an expansion under this policy, that the expansion is not opposed by the city or cities whose UGA will be expanded.
I think you're not looking at the same page. Like, if you go all the way to the third page.
He's looking at it.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
So are you saying that the cities have protection?
Under paragraph one, they do not.
Well, but paragraph one doesn't describe what the council has to specifically find. It's simply saying that after having consultation, the council may do it. The last sentence of that introductory paragraph, such expansion may be permitted where consistent with adopted policies and where the council finds that. And then it sets out the three things that have to be found in order for them to approve the expansion.
There's an or in there, not and.
The or is related to you have to be either A1 or A2. It's not A or B or C. It's A, and then there's an and after B. So you have to, there's an or within A because there's two circumstances where the policy could be invoked. One is where there's an irregular boundary, and the other is the unique circumstance, like for an example of a road being punched through a rural area. So under A, one of those conditions has to exist, but still B and C also have to be found.
Okay. I get it. The logic is different from the other one. But
okay. Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, I'm okay with that. Yes.
So do you have a motion, Brian?
I'm not going to make any motion. I'm carrying the will of the council to the SCT meeting tomorrow. That's what was done last time. So if the
what is your recommended motion?
I would recommend that. I mean, do you think different language is needed to make sure that it's clear that the city's consent is required?
No, I guess it works. I'm just uncomfortable. This is pretty heavy duty stuff for reports without the staff. I wish we knew more from the PAC. I guess I can't.
I'm still here, but I've not reviewed any of
this is a Tom Rogers planning director kind of level thing.
Yeah, and I've had a conversation with Tom Rogers, and he's under the impression as well that for this affected cities, now the definition of affected is not in that language, would have to concur with this. So that's his impression. That's how I read it as well.
And that was a topic of discussion at the SCT meeting when they took up the other policies. What does affected cities mean? And
I think we talked about that too.
You know, I pointed out those, and that's one of the things that if you guys could direct in a motion, it could be a support with the caveat that you'd like the council to explore more definition on what affected cities means.
So you're saying Tom Rogers is okay with this if the city gets to...
Yes, because he's under the impression that before a change in that urban growth boundary is made, for instance, in our case at 43rd, it would have to come to this council to approve, to yay or nay, that change. Now, with the caveat separate from that, that in that language, there's not a definition of what an affected city is.
Okay, but he fundamentally is okay with this as long as we get, so long as we're affected and as long as we get a vote in it. Okay,
that's not good to know.
Okay, I feel better.
And is that the prior policy that gives, that he's relying on?
The split between UGAs?
Yeah, for the consent, because this is just consultation. So is it the prior policy that the council looked at?
I think the word affected has been in there for years.
It hasn't been defined well.
No, I'm sorry. It seems to me when you looked at the prior policy, when you asked council for input on that, there was a recommendation to change the language to consent as opposed to consultation.
Yeah, so this one, and that's what got me tripped up, was this one still uses kind of the original language, following consultation with the affected cities. That's the old language that's the language that existed in the old CPPs. And what you were able to point out to me is that later on down here, he's made it so that we have consent under 2C.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Not opposed down there. But the word affected has lived in the CPPs for a long, long time.
In more places than these.
Than this, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're just kind of going on faith that affected means
impacted.
Talk to the people that are closest to it. Or whose line is drawn around. Where this gets fuzzy is for UGAs that are, would we say that the UGA that is Silver Firs-ish, isn't there, there's one out there that's unclaimed. So who's an affected city because there's no label on that? Or the UGA between us and the highway, it's been contested between us and Linwood, it's crosshatched. Who's affected? You know, I would say both, but that you worry about special cases where it would get upset. But the affected is another battle, a different battle.
Yeah, my suggestion would be to move this forward but make a recommendation that in doing that at some point, and I'm not sure this now is the time, but they need to provide more definition for what an affected city means. I know how most jurisdictions are probably going to interpret it. They're probably going to say, if one traffic trip comes into my city, we're affected, and we want the ability to say yay or nay to it. I don't know if that's the right answer, but I think that there might be some cities. And that this mainly affects, the affected city issue mainly affects the Southwest UGA. It's really the only place it comes into play, because everyone else has their own standalone urban growth boundary. It's only in the Southwest where you got the MUGA and unclaimed areas, and the ones down here are a perfect example because it straddles both our MUGA and Bothell's, and there's some unclaimed area down there as well, I think. So.
Okay, well, we need a motion to approve. So.
I can't make that motion, but I would...
I'll make a motion to approve new proposed new CPP DP2A as proposed in Clay White's memo, dated, I can't find the date.
Yes, it's January 7th.
Yeah, January 7th, 2018. And that we direct our representative to SCT to vote accordingly.
You want something in there regarding affected?
Yes. Sure, go ahead and lump that in too. And we also ask our representative to request SCT to take under advisement the definition, a more complete definition of the word affected as it relates to cities. Is that close enough?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Good.
No, I'm
sorry. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Well, one abstention.
Oh, you're abstention.
Can we get Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw definition of reports?
I did not have her. She made that decision for herself.
Okay, Councilmember Todd?
Well, mine's nowhere near that complicated. So, PSRC Executive Board last Thursday had what was termed a robust discussion about regional growth centers. They've been working for a couple of years on how they define regional growth centers, and this has to do a lot with where transportation dollars go. So federal transportation dollars come to the four-county region, and how they get split up kind of depends on where collectively, under GMA and a lot of other rules, we put our growth. And so this went through the Growth Management Policy Board. They spent a couple of years on it. They had a robust discussion there also. And I'll get back to the reason for that in a minute. It went to the Transportation Policy Board. They had a robust discussion. It went to the Executive Board. It went back. It went back and forth. It is down to the wire. And they had a long discussion with a lot of dissent and some Robert's Rules of Order, clever stuff. And the discussion centers around Pierce County's concern and desire that major military installations, namely JBLM, be considered the same in terms of transportation funding as other regional growth centers. And there's a case to be made for, yes, indeed, that is a lot of folks going to work on JBLM. So it does impact transportation, but it's a different animal than a regional growth center called Payne Field or called Canyon Park or called Arlington Marysville Manufacturing Industrial Center, where we as the cities get to specify through zoning and land use patterns whether it's residential or mixed use or commercial or industrial or whatever. And so everybody agrees this has got to get fixed somehow, and poor Pierce County has been bounced around to various boards, and at each of these they've tried to run amendments up, and it got really ugly. Somebody pulled out, it's got to be a two-thirds majority to do this or that, and it apparently the meeting ran long, and when they got done, it was a 76% yes to approve the framework, but all along everybody's been saying we've got to work with Pierce County, and it affects us too. It affects us with Naval Station Everett and affects Kitsap. We've got to figure out some way to recognize military centers, but understand that we don't get to control how many people work at that base or how many people live on that base or how many people commute back and forth to that base. So it's a little bit different animal when it comes to transportation funding. The bottom line is any county can say this is an important center for us. So Pierce County has the ability to say this is an important project for us. They get six free chits to put it into the competition for money. So they can still get money, but it's at what's called the countywide competition instead of the whole regional competition. It's complicated, but anyway, it's gone forward. And the good news for Snohomish County is we only had close to us, Canyon Park, Pierce, Payne Field. There's five total. Can't remember all of them, but with five, we don't even have enough centers named for us to use all of our slots for competition for funding. And so we, Snohomish County, are anxious to have this happen so that Arlington Marysville, where they got a lot of industrial land, a lot of room for growth, a lot of room for opportunity for jobs, for people to commute north to there instead of all down to Seattle. This is going to set it up for them to do it. So they're very excited about this, and this is good for Snohomish County overall. And it's a meeting we're all glad we didn't go to. I'll just report, I went to the State of the County message last week. It was good. I just was there to make sure Mill Creek was represented, to hear what Executive Summers said. We probably should look for some of those. They probably put some highlights out of that. Of course, he talked quite a bit about the opioid crisis and what they're doing and some of the good stuff that's happened. Thank the state legislature for some of the dollars that have come in there. But Snohomish County is doing some really good things. It just made it really aware to me that these are the kinds of things we need to pay attention to what our county's doing, because we know we're impacted by this stuff, but we're too little to really participate directly. And just like the State of Everett message, the State of the County message, I think, makes a big difference to us. Last one is, you may have noticed that on the north edge, when Joni called together a meeting of a lot of folks to talk about transportation projects, and community transit is a big part of that with Swift Construction. Don't know exactly when, but they're headed down 527. When they do, there's going to be some jackhammering of pavement coming out, and it's community transit has had somebody go out and talk to the people close to those areas and say, look, this is going to happen at night. It's noisy. We'll help you with white noise generators, or we'll help you with earplugs, or let us know. So I think they're doing a really good job of trying to get ahead of it. But if you hear about this going on, those folks have been, I think they've communicated a lot to them. But anyway, that's going to happen as early as next week, I think. Tonight? Is it tonight they're starting? Okay. Could be. On Trillium. So it's going to happen. And what will happen is these, you know, they'll come in and jackhammer out some pavement, and it could take, the contractor's allowed to have up to 5 days. And they might jackhammer tonight, and they find a gas line right through it. So they got to stop and wait till the gas line gets moved, and they'll come back next week and do the other 4 days or whatever. So it isn't necessarily leave down for 5 days. They don't really know until they open it up. So if you hear stuff that's going on, community transit has a 24 hour. Somebody's got a hotline, red phone that they will listen and help these folks out. But hopefully everybody's has heard about that ahead of time. Thanks.
Okay, city manager.
Thank you. In your packet is just the monthly labor management minutes with AFSCME. This month we did start the first of a regular series of guild labor management meetings that went very well, and I had feedback just today from the guild president that the guild thought it was very beneficial, and so you'll be seeing those minutes coming through in your packet as well. Council planning schedule, but kind of an unusual report that we've included in there for you is the communications plan, and I will say preliminary plan, for the 35th Avenue project. We actually opened bids today on the 35th Avenue project. We had three bids. And so Gina and her staff have gone through and verified the bids, so there's no calculation errors in the bids. So that's the first step. And now we move on to reviewing the qualifications of the bidders. So this project is continuing to move forward. I've had questions about, well, how are we preparing for this? So I thought it would just be good to just put this in as an informational item. When we launch a project or an initiative, one of the things that Joni and her staff does for me is put together a communications plan for that particular initiative or project. And so I thought you might be interested to see what that looks like. And so this is a plan that's evolved with Joni, Gina, Greg, all working together to kind of outline the steps we're going to take during the project and the schedule for when that happens. I'm not going to go through that in detail. Again, it's more of an informational item, but I encourage you to walk through that. And if you have questions, of course, please feel free to give me a call. Or if you have any ideas that you don't see encapsulated in here. Councilmember Todd had shared with me some things Community Transit was doing with virtual meetings, and we were able, Joni has established some great communications contacts with CT. Gina has developed some great contacts, so we've got a lot of things developing from that. But one of that is they kind of shared how they do the virtual meetings, and it's pretty easy and inexpensive, and so we're going to try it for this project and see how it works. So I think that is awesome. And so what I can tell you is I feel like we'll have a comprehensive plan and way to be responsive. I cannot promise you people won't be frustrated with construction, because that's the nature of construction, but I can tell you they'll know what's coming and when. And so and we're having to continue to work to finalize this. There's some things that are dependent on other agencies that we're waiting on for final verification. But so this is a work in progress, but just want you to be aware of that. Okay.
That's all. So next up is audience communications. Seeing none, we will recess to executive session for discussion of the performance of a public employee for RCW 42-30110-1G to take no longer than 20 minutes.